So we get a few of those more complicated, less connected, less focused proverbs today. And what makes it even more curious to me as someone trying to figure this book out, I'm by no means a master of it. What makes it all the more curious is that it's just a few, and then it goes right back into the wicked and the righteous, the wicked and the righteous. But these three, it's not like they don't have that play on them, but they get real narrow. And you'll see, I mean, the reason I'm only going to read just these three, is it three? Yeah, three. Is because we really got to ruminate on them a lot. And as you found out, you know, I'm taking a lot of time. Now that we've been back to 7:15, I'm barely fitting in everything we want to talk about here in this first hour of his time. And so we don't want to miss these, and yet we don't want to confuse them with other things either. Okay, so it's Proverbs chapter 10, verses 15 to 17. Coming out of the two words, right? That the righteous have good words, words of life. And the wicked have bad words, words of destruction. Dwelling on that for multiple Proverbs in a row, now, 15 says, whoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer harm, but he who hates striking hands in pledge is secure. All right. And then verse 16 says, a gracious woman gets honor, and a violent man gets riches. All right. And then verse 17 says, and this one makes more sense and almost would fit with the rest, but it doesn't mention righteousness or wickedness. A man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. All right. I mean, that one, at least like on the surface, I see that just kind of makes sense. That's common sense. And it could lead into, and so maybe it does belong with what comes next, which is a return to wickedness and righteousness. I'll just read verse 18. We'll pick it up next Monday. But the wicked earns deceptive wages, but the one who sows righteousness gets a sure reward. That's where we've been, right? That's the kind of talk we've heard. And you can kind of see how a man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. You can kind of see how that might fit. And the gist of that proverb, you don't need 3 hours to kind of sit and stare at a sunset and think about it to really come up with the answer there, I don't think, right? The idea is that if you're good to other people, it's actually good for you. And if you're wicked to other people, it's actually hard on you eventually. You could call it karma. We don't teach karma in Christianity. We don't believe in karma. Not in the way that all the baggage that comes with that word. But we do believe that there is justice in the universe. And in that sense, what you do will have ramifications. As you plant, so you will reap, right? It doesn't mean that if you always do the right thing, you'll always have something good come of it, because we live in this messed up fallen world where sometimes the evil just happens no matter what. A tower like the one at Siloam can fall on you, whether you're a righteous Christian or whether you're a uncircumcised, unbelieving pagan, right? But in general, nonetheless, there's this reality that if you're kind to others, well, they're going to like you. And if you're cruel to others, well, they're not going to like you. And it kind of builds who you are. So 17, it fits. And yet it moves out of this faith unbelief paradigm we've been in a little bit and becomes more about, I mean, actually, you know, even if you're not a believer, it like just makes sense to do the right thing because it's going to be good for you, right? It's selfish driven. But fine. Okay. It's wisdom. We can handle that. But going backwards again now, we got these other two, 15 and 16, that are just like, huh? A gracious woman gets honor. Okay, well, yeah, that sounds good, right? Okay, good. So try to be gracious to others and they will respect you. That's wonderful. And a violent man gets riches. Whoa! Are we supposed to take from this that if we want to be wealthy, we should be violent? And I love this proverb, this particular one, in the sense that, I mean, here you have, you want to talk about Job's reality, the world we live in, what Job saw, and what that book teaches us that we're so willing to not believe these days, this is it. You do the right thing, you might get rewarded. You do the wrong thing, you'll probably get rewarded. That's the wisdom of Proverbs 10:16. That you can't tell by what somebody does whether or not they're good. You can't tell by what somebody gets out of their actions whether or not they're good. Just because it works doesn't mean it's good. The ends do not justify the means. And the pragmatic spirit, which really is the way that we Americans think, if it works, it must be good, the pragmatic spirit is a lie. Because somebody can have all the goods in the whole world because of their violent spirit. And yet someone can have the greatest honor in the world because of their gracious spirit. I mean, isn't that one that is really worth just pondering that again? A gracious woman gets honor, and, or you could translate it as, but a violent man gets riches. And if you add the but there, and this is the thing about Hebrew. Hebrew doesn't really have the word but. It has the word and but. And it's one letter right on the front. It does have ways, I believe, to make harder distinctions, but the general just kind of turn of phrase can be and or but, and you have to have the context tell you what it means, which gets tough with things like poetry then, right? Moments like this. But if you translate that wow there, it's just one letter again, as a but, a gracious woman gets honor, but a violent man gets riches. You could go further with this. I'm not sure I want to, but you could go in the direction that the one who is serving the righteousness of faith, the one who is striving for goodness and mercy toward others, will be honored, but not necessarily with riches. Whereas the one who is serving mammon in this age, well, he gets what he goes after. He gets riches. I mean, you could go that direction. It almost makes it fit in the context. I don't know. It's tough, huh? I mean, this is the point of the proverb, too, in some ways. Proverbs in general, what's it supposed to do? It's supposed to make you think. Think with the word of God. Verse 15 then also, I mean, just what? Whoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer harm. But he who hates striking hands in pledge is secure. In other words, shaking hands is a godless tradition and you should in no means loan money. I mean, that's the surface way to read this. Now, don't get too legalistic on me. It's not against shaking hands. but it is pointing out the danger in loaning money. And notice loaning money to a stranger here, right? So the idea is that it's really not about money at all. The idea is don't be quick to trust somebody you do not know. Because if this is a little section on the world's distractions and what goes around comes around and what a bizarre and Job-like suffering place this is because of the sin of all of us, then in that part of wisdom is knowing what is in a man, as John's gospel says of Jesus, not entrusting yourself to just any old man who comes along. It's not that strangers can't be kind, that they can't be good people, but that the world is full of sinners. It's full of selfish people, evil people, and who have, if they have no reason to do good to you, why would they? So then having a stranger come along and say, hey, give me $500, I'll pay you back tomorrow. Well, you just met the guy, right? And if you refrain from striking hands in pledge, now notice the connection to vows here a little bit, right? An extra promise over and above your word. It's not enough. I don't trust you. We have to shake hands to make it work, right? This is the idea that why vows are condemned sort of in the New Testament. Not that you can never sign an agreement or anything like that. But the idea is vows only exist in a world with sin and lies. If there were no lies, you'd need no vows. If there were no lies, you'd need no human promises. I'd never have to say to you, I swear it's true, because there'd be no lies, right? So as a result, vows always come from distrust and unbelief, and they are then a fruit of and a result of sin and living in a sinful world. It doesn't mean you can't ever sign a contract for your car. You must do business. It doesn't mean you can't take a wedding vow. There's nothing wrong in that sense with emphasizing the goodness of your words. The New Testament emphasizes, you know, let your yes be yes, let your vow be a vow. I will take you unto death do we part. You know, we don't add I swear to it, right? We do say I pledge to you my faithfulness. But the idea, again, being more, avoid having to say more than you have to. Avoid having to prove that you're telling the truth. Tell the truth. Tell the truth and be aware that the world does not tell the truth. Don't assume the world's going to tell you the truth. Know that the grace that you have will bring honor, but it may not bring you riches. Know that kindness is actually good for everybody, including you, and that, well, cruelty hurts everyone, including you. Hey, we kind of tied that up with a nice little bow. I'm not entirely confident how it fits in the context, but at the very least, well, it gives you something to chew on.